Let's come to the Lord's Word tonight. Now, last week in the meeting, friends, we talked to you about snow. I think you can see that there's a lot to be learned there on the issue of snow. We were talking about that in the meeting last week, and I trust that the Lord really did bless that to your heart. But tonight I want to move on to something which is less frequently mentioned in the Bible, and that is the subject of sweat. Because I was amazed, really, when I came to look at this in the Scriptures, that I could only find three references to sweat in the Bible all told. Now, I stand to be corrected on that one, because the Bible's a pretty big book. But only three could I find in the Bible, and tonight I want to talk about those three to you in the meeting, because there's a lot to be learned from the issue of sweat and what the Bible tells us about it. Now, without any further introduction, friends, let me bring you to Genesis, the third chapter, and that's where we begin our study tonight. Genesis chapter number 3. And of course, you know where we're heading for right away. We're heading to the story of the fall. I won't talk about that tonight or mention it much in the meeting. We're all very familiar with the details and also the consequences of it. How that by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, wherefore death is passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. But what we're chasing after in the chapter tonight, and in the Bible, is this issue of sweat, and what the Bible has to tell us about it. Now, you run your eye down to verse number 18 of the chapter. And here is God having a conversation, if you like, with Adam, after he had rebelled and sinned and partaken of the forbidden fruit and done the very thing that God told him that he ought not to do. Now, of course, it's very easy to point the finger at Adam, but we're all pretty good at being Adam from time to time. That's a fact. I think we'd be very, very dishonest tonight if we didn't admit or own up to that. I remember going along to a meeting one time in the town of Newton Lodge many years ago, and I had a very dear old brother with me who's now in heaven. And the gentleman who was there preaching, I can't even remember his name at the moment, he gave a message that night. It was to believers at a conference, and he spoke on the word saint. And he did it so masterly, and it was so cleverly and well put over, that you were sitting in the meeting thanking God you were a saint by calling, and you felt you might never sin again. That's how it was. But I come out of the meeting, a lot of a younger man than I am now, and this old guy was with me, and I said to him, "Bob, what do you make out of that tonight, man?" He said, "I want to tell you, that was well done. Well done." And he said, "I never heard it, you know, explained so clearly and plainly as it was." But he said, "Listen, keep your feet in the ground." I said, "What do you mean?" Well, he said, "If he put up an umbrella," and he said it wrote "sinner" across the front, and he told everybody that was a sinner to run in below it. He says, "Saint or no, I think I would still have to go." I never forgot that. He was a very practical and a very down-to-earth man. It's very easy to point the finger. Terribly, terribly simple to become a critic, you see. And I've always guarded against that all my life. If you can say nothing good about something, say nothing at all. Sometimes, of course, a little bit of criticism is necessary. Like what I've just done with the Unitarian side of things. I don't see anything wrong with that. But sometimes criticism can cause a lot of harm among God's people. Now, enough about that. Let's go to verse 18 of the chapter. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee. Now, if you're wondering where the thorns and the thistles come from, there's your answer. There was a time when the Bible had neither, or the earth had neither. But they came as a result of the fall. Notice that. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee. And thou shalt eat the herb of the field. So Adam was what you might call a vegetarian at the beginning. You see, thou shalt eat the herb of the field, and so on. But whenever the days of the tabernacle and the temple and all that sort of thing came round, well, meat eating and all that goes along with it was introduced by God and was made allowable. It's very good to go into the books of the Old Testament there, into the Pentateuch, and take a look at the Bible food laws. And sometimes if you do, and look at it carefully, you'll discover that we're not very good at keeping them at all. You see, but that's another issue. Now, note this, verse 19. A lot of things in this verse, and I'll touch them as quickly as I can. In the sweat, now there's the first reference. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread. In other words, life was not going to be simple anymore. No, no. Whenever God put Adam and Eve into that garden, you know, they had all the multiplicity of food that they needed. But now they're outside, driven out, because of the introduction of sin, or rather, that driving out was about to come. And my friends, things were going to change and change terribly. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread. That's what God said to Adam. This was all part of punishment, if you like, because of sin, and it all came into the human family because of the curse, because of what happened yonder in Eden. Now, we could spend a lot of time on all these. Watch this. Till thou return unto the ground. Now, that's something that lies in the future of every one of us if the Lord tarries. Just watch what it says. Until or till thou return unto the ground. I stood very recently beside the heartbroken husband of a lady who I knew very well. Very, very well. He's a missionary, and him and her have worked for years in Mexico, and she took very seriously ill with throat cancer, and inside about 6 weeks she was gone. And I stood beside him. I did the funeral. I'd actually did their wedding too. And I spoke at the funeral, and it was difficult because of this COVID situation. And I remember the coffin being lowered into the grave. And he looked at me and he said this. He said, "You know, brother, this is the most humiliating thing I've ever witnessed." And isn't it true? I witnessed that. Never forget that day. Never will. Whenever that coffin was lowered into the ground and the soil was placed upon it, and that was that. It's so final. Until thou return unto the ground. Now watch. For out of it wast thou taken. No evolution here. Out of it wast thou taken. That's where Adam came from. Out of the ground wast thou taken. You know, evolution is a scourge, particularly in the schools of the province today, and I suppose the schools of the world, where people are told this theory that we came originally from monkeys or whatever. I don't know whether you've ever heard the evolutionist poem or not. You know, once I was a tadpole beginning to begin. Then I became a frog with my tail tucked in. Then a monkey up a banana tree, and now a professor with a PhD. You believe that, you believe anything. But that basically sums up what evolutionists believe. That's what they try to tell you. That we came from monkeys and all that sort of thing. My youngest daughter, about 7 or 8 years ago, had two little twin girls. You see, one day I was talking to her on the phone about something, and she said to me, "Dad, you know something?" I said, "You tell me and I will. You never know what's coming." She said, "You know, I never believed in evolution till now." I said, "What? You believe in evolution?" "Oh," she said, "do you see these twins?" I says, "I do." Well, she says, "Two bigger monkeys never walked than what the two of them are." And it was perfectly true, you know. I bought them at Christmas 1 year, two little suits to wear, you know. Mischievous elves, you know. And boy, they lived up to that reputation. They put these on with this mischievous elves on them, and they got up to everything underneath the sun. Who do you think got the blame? Of course I deserved it, for I bought them for them. But that's how it goes. But no, friends, we're not having anything to do with that nonsense. For that's all it is. Rubbish with a capital R and nonsense with a capital N. For out of it wast thou taken. That's what God says. Now watch this bit. For dust thou art. You're looking at that. For dust thou art. Now, I was thinking about that some time back. I don't know what Adam and Eve lived in the Garden of Eden. I've no idea. I was asked that in a Sunday school class one time, some years back, what they actually lived in by way of house or habitation. And I just admit I have no idea, and I've never been able to find out anything. Nobody's been able to tell me. But they must have lived on something, or in something. But here's the bit that struck me. Now, I know this is a little bit of fanciful thinking. But whenever God made Adam, and finally made Eve from Adam, you see, he didn't use the dust of the sideboard. And I'm using language you can understand to get the point of this. He didn't use the dust of the piano or the organ. He didn't use the dust of the table. He used the dust of the ground. Can you get any lower than that? You see, now that does away with pride. Completely. I watched with interest yesterday Her Majesty the Queen and the Queen's speech. And as I watched that dear old lady walking into the House of Commons and all that sort of thing yesterday, and remembered her from the time she was coronated as a fine looking young woman. Now she's an old stooped over grandmother. You see, and the Duke of Edinburgh, who was always at her side, he's gone. Gone. Dust thou art. That's it. And that's a very humbling thing. Very, very humbling thing. And look at the rest of the verse, because I want to go further. Dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. I've called that the return journey. Because we're all on that journey. Unto dust shalt thou return. I don't know whether I've ever told you or not, but this bears mentioning tonight in the meeting. Way down the Ards many years ago, I was responsible for doing a funeral. And Whenever I have the responsibility of doing a funeral when things were normal, without this COVID thing overriding and overruling and complicating issues, when you go to the house, you see, and you do what you're expected to do there in the house, I always like to try to find a road somewhere or other that I can get to the graveyard first. The reason for that being that I went to a house one day and I followed the hearse, you know, to the graveyard. And I came to a road and there was another hearse. And didn't Muggins here follow the wrong one? And I ended up at the wrong graveyard altogether. You know, I've only ever done that once, but that taught me a lesson. So I tried to find a simpler route just to get there first. And this particular day I got there, and in this graveyard, there was an old man called Robert, and he was the grave digger. And I knew him all my life. And he was busy. He had dug the grave where I was doing the funeral. And he was busy digging a grave for the next day. You see. And when I went into the graveyard on my own, because nobody was there, he shouted over to me, "Harvey, come here, I want you." And I went up to see him, what on earth he was at. And down there in that graveyard, it was very, very sandy soil. Therefore, wood was preserved well in that kind of situation. And when he had dug down to where this other funeral or burial was to be done, he had to hit the last coffin that had been put in there many years previous, and it was still very intact. But he actually had hit it, you see, with a pick or a sledge or something, and smashed it badly. So what he had done was gathered the pieces out, put them into bags, and then when the other remains would be left in, he would put the two in together. And I said to him, I said, "Do you get this kind of thing often?" "Yes," he said, "occasionally." But he said, "Come on here a minute, I want to show you something." And I remember going over, friends, and looking into that open grave that hadn't been opened for somewhere in the region about 15 or 16 years. And I could see the outline of a man's body lying there in that grave. I could see it. I could see the very beard that he had all those years, lying there in the earth. "Now," he said, "Harvey, just you watch." And he went over to the edge of the grave, and he knelt down on his knee, and he went like that, and the whole thing disappeared. Just like that. The outline was there in the dust. And I saw that with my own eyes. "Dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return." I remember saying to him, "Do you see that kind of thing very often?" He says, "Here in this soil I would." But he says, "Elsewhere, definitely not." But I saw it. I saw the outline of that man lying there. And it had been there for years. You see. And yet with one blow, the whole thing just departed. "Dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return." Now friends, we could say this tonight, that that all comes, that sweat, because of the corruption of sin. And if the Lord tarries, it'll happen to you, and it'll happen to me. We're all on that return journey. "Dust thou art," very humbling, "and unto dust shalt thou return." And it was the dust of the ground. When I looked at Her Majesty the Queen yesterday, you know, and I thought, my, what a leveler this is. What a leveler. Doesn't matter whether you're beggar or monarch. "Dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return." The corruption of sin. Now, Let's go over to the book of Ezekiel. This is the second reference. Ezekiel 44. Chapter 44. And let's run our eye down to verse number 16 of the chapter. Now this is a section of scripture that's maybe not handled or mentioned or exposed, if you like, as often maybe as it should be, because there are amazing lessons to be learned. The things written aforetime were written for our learning, and of course we can benefit and learn from what's written here, because it has to do with God's servants, if you like, making their approach to God and how it is to be done. Ezekiel 44 and verse 16. Now, I was talking to a man the other day, and we were discussing the way things are going, particularly in the days in which you and I are living. And there's an awful decline, you see, in how people attempt today to make their approach to God. I go to meetings sometimes, you're asked to go along to preach, you go, and I see some people coming in, jeans on with no knees, they would almost embarrass you to look at them. You see, they start off with a pair of trousers that you'd be gladly thrown in the bin. You see, and they come into the presence of God with that. Well now, I'm not so sure that that's right. You know, I don't care what anybody tells me. People would say, well, maybe you're being a little bit old-fashioned. And well, what's wrong with being old-fashioned if old-fashioned is right? But I see no reason to change for change's sake. You know, I don't see any reason for that. And, well, when I see that kind of thing, it really does annoy me. But you go in, you preach the gospel, and you leave. And that's the way it is. There's nothing much I can do in that sort of a situation. However, if I come in here next week and I see Davy and Sam with a knee out of their trousers, I'll soon be at them. You know, you know. They'll not. Whenever they make the announcements for Sunday, I'll be saying, "Hey boys, tidy yourself up a bit, you know, before you go that far." I'm only joking. Now, Chapter 44 of Ezekiel. I was thinking coming up in the car tonight about the names of some of these men. A wee bit of homework if you want. It's a wonderful thing to have E-L in your name. That's God. Ezekiel. Daniel. Joel. And so on. It's great to have God in your name. But isn't it much better to have God in your life? It certainly is. Now, we could maybe get round to preaching the gospel on that some night. It just struck me coming up in the car how good it is to have L in your name. There's quite a few in the Bible who have. But let's have a look at verse 16. They shall enter into my sanctuary and they shall come near to my table. Now these are the priests. You'll find that in the previous verse. God says, okay, you can enter into my sanctuary and you can come near to my table to minister unto me and they shall keep my charge. You know, in the prayer meeting in there tonight, I was listening as people were praying and I was thinking about this here. They shall minister unto me. Do we really remember sometimes when we come to the prayer meeting that we're talking to God? Or do we? You know, you come in and you've certain things to pray for. And your mind's maybe filled with the things you want to pray for. And rightly so, there's nothing wrong with that. But do we forget that the Lord is there? Do we come seeing by faith the Lord in the midst? If we miss that, we miss a lot. If we miss that, we miss everything. We really do. You see, it's good to come to sing that old hymn tonight that Sam gave out. That's a lovely hymn. With harps and with viols there stand a great throng in the presence of Jesus and sing this new song, and so on. That's good. And to pray, that's good, and so on. But to meet with God is the main issue. To listen to his word, yes, that's good. To have the privilege of handling it, that's good too. But meeting with God is the main issue. There am I in the midst of them. I'm always telling you things or telling people things, and sometimes I get told off for this. But years ago, when I was a boy, I'll tell you how big a boy I was. My granda used to take me in the bar of the bike. And that's, you know, bother taking me in the bar of the bike now. But my grandfather met with brother in his lifetime. Always very open. He sang among meetings and so on. That's one of the things that I couldn't handle very well in the part of the world I'm living in now. Oh, they were as tight as a fiddle string, you know. And well, God bless them. If they're tight every way, I'm not arguing. That's up to them. Fair enough. But he would have preached the gospel and sang a solo or two. And then they had a quartet. His two daughters, one of them being my mother, and a cousin. And the four of them sang together. And it was all gospel hall ministry in our part of the world, and it was good. But he had a brother, lived quite convenient to the hall, who didn't enjoy great health. He was known as Uncle David, and he wasn't my uncle, he's my mother's uncle, but I just knew him as Uncle David. And sometimes on a Saturday morning, my grandfather would have taken me over to see his brother, just went on the bike, and I sat on a cushion in the bar. And you were very close to the gospel hall, Ebenezer Gospel Hall, yonder on the outskirts of Portavogie. And I used to go down to that hall, and I'm trying to remember, because they took it down and built a new one, the kind of windows there was. The windows were a sort of frosted glass halfway up, and glass, the rest, you see. And I could see in through those windows on my tiptoes. And the reason why I did it was, there was a lady lived there in that area, and she was called Wee Lizzie. And that's all I ever knew her as, Wee Lizzie. And I used to get up on my tiptoes and watch Wee Lizzie cleaning the hall on a Saturday morning. And I was absolutely fascinated. Totally. And I never told anybody what I had seen. But I'll get to the point in a minute. Years afterwards, when I came to know the Lord, I got to know Wee Lizzie. And boys, did I get to respect her. She was a mighty wee woman of God. There's no doubt about it. But one day, I got a chance of talking to Wee Lizzie on her own. I said, Lizzie, listen. I used to watch you cleaning the gospel hall on a Saturday morning. And she looked at me, dumbfounded. She said, what do you mean? I said, I got on my tiptoes, looked in the window, and I saw you. I said, why did you do what you did? Now, what did she do that fascinated me? She cleaned the hall and dusted the seats on her knees. You're listening to that? She cleaned the hall and dusted the seats on her knees. Now, I'm not telling you that's what you should do. I'm not saying that. But I said, Lizzie, why did you do that? She said, Harvey, the Lord and his people meet there. She said, what else could I do? Now, I was that godliness or was that extreme? I'll leave you to think about that yourself. But she was a woman of God. There's no doubt about that. Wee Lizzie, as we knew her, she was no height, you know. And I used to tease her about her height. I used to say that the devil made Lizzie in the middle of the night. He made her in such a hurry, he forgot to give her height. And so on, I teased her with that. Away you and give me peace, she would say. And she never would tell you your age. I said to her, Lizzie, one day, I want to know your age. Why? I said, if you died, what would they put in the paper? You know. Well, she says, I'll tell you my age, but I'm telling nobody else. And you must promise me you'll not tell anybody. And I thought to myself, well, if you died and I know, and I'm still here, at least that would be something. I said, right, Lizzie, the covenant's made. Tell me your age, I'll tell nobody. Harvey, I'm the same age as my tongue, and a year older than my teeth. And that was all I ever got to know. There you are. You ever heard that before? A year, the same age as my tongue, and a year older than my teeth. And that was all I ever got to know about Lizzie or her age. There you are. Next time somebody asks you, why do you ladies, I was telling people at a meeting there this week, why do people, do you ladies never want your age to be known? My late mother was 70 for 21 years. She didn't know what age she was herself. And when our brother, my Uncle David, a real Uncle David this time, came from Canada, we had to go to the local Presbyterian church and dig out the records to find out what age she was. For even he couldn't remember. You know. So there you are. However, that's another subject. That's another subject. You know, I'm 21 plus that. I remember that. My goodness, I've an old friend of you, David was his name. And whenever the bat came out, he had taken a heart attack. I'm on to something. I better get off this kind of nonsense quick. But he had taken a very serious heart attack, and he was very ill. And I rang him up. He lived in Downpatrick. I said, Davy, how are you? Oh, he says, Harvey, I'm physically, I'm not good. Spiritually, I'm on top of the world. But he says, I'm just lying here thinking. Whenever God saved me, he saved me that included. I says, David, you gone off your head? He says, no, I'm fine. He says, spell the word. S-A-L-V-A-T. There it is. Value added tax. V-A-T. Right in the middle of the word. S-A-L-V-A-T-I-O-N. I was left with not a word to say. Not very often that happens, but David was right. He was saved, that included. Isn't that a good one? Yeah, there you are. These are things well worth. Somebody told me the other day I should write a lot of these things down. I've heard a lot of things I didn't write down. I don't know how on earth I would ever pick them out, but there it is. Let's come back to where we were here. Now, verse 16 we've covered. Now, verse 17. This is the verse I really want to get to. Sorry, the next one is the one I really want to get to, but we're moving our way there. And it shall come to pass that when they enter in at the gates of the inner court, they shall be clothed with linen garments. Get that? Clothed with linen garments. And no wool shall come upon them. Whilst they minister in the gates of the inner court and within. Linen only, no wool. Why? Now watch the next verse. They shall have linen bonnets upon their heads, and shall have linen breeches upon their loins. They shall not gird themselves with anything that causeth sweat. Let me read that verse to you again. They shall have linen bonnets upon their heads. If you look at the guy in the back room, you'll see a sample of what that means. And shall have linen breeches upon their loins. They shall not gird themselves with anything that causeth sweat. Why on earth was that? My friends, the reason for that is very simple. Sweat came because of sin. God would have nothing in his presence that reminds him of sin. Not a single thing. Therefore, they had to wear clothes that made it impossible for them to sweat. Think of that. Nothing that commemorates or reveals or brings the thought of sin in any line or way was going to be allowed into the presence of God. He simply wouldn't have it. There is a city bright. Closed are its gates to sin. Not that defileth. Not that defileth shall ever enter in. It won't be there. That's a marvelous thought. Now, you could call that, if you like, the condemnation of sin. God's condemning it utterly. It'll not be here. I met a man one day, many, many years ago. I'd had the joy and pleasure of leading a daughter of his to the Lord. And through that experience with his daughter, I got introduced to him. I think he was the biggest man I've ever seen, every way. His name was Samuel. Samuel, sadly, was a Unitarian. And I got into conversation with him one day. And I said, "Sam, you're getting on." He said, "Sam, he's gone now. You're getting on." He said, "That's right." His wife had died. And for some reason or other, I could never get him to say what she died with. He just said it was a big C. That was the only thing he would say. He wouldn't use the word. But I said to him, "Sam, someday you'll go too. Harvey, don't you start preaching to me." I said, "Sam, wait a minute. I'm not preaching to you. I'm telling you the truth." He said, "Listen, when I meet God," he says, "I'll tell him I fought in two wars." And so he did. You see, he fought in both world wars. I said, "Say that again, Sam." "When I meet God, I'll tell him I fought in two world wars." Right? I said, "Sam, what about the greatest battle and the greatest victory that ever happened on planet Earth?" And he looked at me. He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I'm talking about Calvary. When the Lord Jesus fought the battle of sin and Satan and salvation and triumphed gloriously in that he rose again from the dead." I couldn't get him to accept the resurrection at all. Well, sadly, if that's all he had when he moved to eternity, you and I know where he's gone to. And I liked him. I really liked him. Apart from this notion of things that he had, he was a reasonable character to talk to every other way, and a very clever man too. "But one thing thou lackest." I've met so many people like that. So many in my lifetime. I have another sweat, friends, to touch, and I don't think I'm going to do it tonight. We're flying up to 8 o'clock here. And it's the most important one of the three. And I think I'll leave it till next week. Because that's where the Savior sweat, as it were, great drops of blood falling down to the ground, and I don't want to talk about that for 2 minutes. I don't think that would be the right thing to do. So, there's something for you to think about. You see, and if you've got any errors and graces about you, it would knock them out of you, wouldn't it? You know, dust thou art. That's very plain. Dust thou art. And unto dust shalt thou return. Well, keep your head above water. Keep praying. And remember us down there in Greba, as it's known in that part of the world. Pray that God will bless and undertake and use his word to bring others to the Savior. It's just bordering 8 o'clock, and I don't think I should, I wouldn't do that justice. I don't think that would be the right thing to do. So we leave it, God willing, to next Wednesday night. Let's talk to the Lord. Lord, we thank thee for thy word and for the instruction it gives us and for the things that we can learn. The entrance of thy word giveth light. Take what has been of thyself tonight, bury it in every heart. What has been of man, may it be both forgiven and forgotten. We commend us to thee as we part and ask for journeying mercies and thy blessing upon this.